Chapter 22. The drum stopped with the dawn, and after it the silence was very heavy, and it was no relief. They had grown accustomed to that broken rhythm, and now in some strange way they missed it. As Bruce moved around the lager, he could sense the uneasiness in his men. There was a feeling of dread anticipation on them all. They moved with restraint, as though they didn't want to draw attention to themselves. The laughter with which they acknowledged his jokes was nervous, quickly cut off as though they had laughed in a cathedral, and their eyes kept darting back towards the ring of jungle. Bruce found himself wishing for an attack. His own nerves were rubbed sensitive by contact with the fear all around him. If only they would come, he told himself. If only they would show themselves, and we could see men, not phantoms. But the jungle was silent. It seemed to wait. It watched them. They could feel the gaze of hidden eyes. Its malignant presence pressed closer as the heat built up. Bruce walked across the lager to the south side, trying to move casually. He smiled at Sergeant Jacques, squatted beside him, and peered from under the truck across open ground at the remains of the bridge. "Trucks'll be back soon," he said. "Won't take long to repair that." Jacques did not answer. There was a worried frown on his high, intelligent forehead, and his face was shiny with perspiration. "It's the waiting, Captain. It softens the stomach." "They will be back soon," repeated Bruce. "If this one is worried, and he's the best of them, then the others must be almost in a jelly of dread." Bruce looked at the face of the man on the other side of Jacques. Its expression shrieked with fear. "If they attack now, God knows how it'll turn out. An African can think himself to death. They just lie down and die. They're getting to that stage now. If an attack comes, they'll either go berserk or curl up and wail with fear. You can never tell. Be honest with yourself. You're not entirely happy either, are you?" "No," Bruce agreed. "It's the waiting, does it?" It came from the edge of the clearing on the far side of the lager, a high-pitched, inhuman sound, angry, savage. Bruce felt his heart trip, and he spun round to face it. For a second, the whole lager seemed to cringe from it. It came again, like a whip across aching nerves. Immediately it was lost in the roar of 20 rifles. Bruce laughed, threw his head back and let it come from the belly. The gunfire stammered into silence, and others were laughing also. The men who'd fired grinned sheepishly and made a show of reloading. It was not the first time that Bruce had been startled by the cry of a yellow hornbill, but now he recognized his laughter and the laughter of the men around him, a mild form of hysteria. "Did you want the feathers for your hat?" someone shouted, and the laughter swept round the lager. The tension relaxed as the banter was tossed back and forth. Bruce stood up and brought his own laughter under control. No harm done, he decided. For the price of 50 rounds of ammunition, a purchase of an hour's escape from tension. A good bargain. He walked across to Charmaine. She was smiling also. "How's the catering section?" he grinned at her. "What miracle of the culinary art is there for lunch?"
"Bully beef."
"And onions?"
"No, just bully beef. The onions are finished."
Bruce stopped smiling. "How much is left?" he asked.
"One case. Enough to last till lunchtime tomorrow."
It would take at least 2 days to complete the repairs to the bridge. Another day's travel after that.
"Well," he said, "we should all have healthy appetites by the time we get home. You'll have to try to spread it out. Half rations from now on."
He was so engrossed in the study of this new complication that he didn't notice the faint hum from outside the lager.
"Captain," called Jacques, "can you hear it?"
Bruce inclined his head and listened.
"The trucks!"
His voice was loud with relief, and instantly there was an excited murmur round the lager. The waiting was over. They came growling out of the bush into the clearing, heavily loaded, timber and sheet iron protruding backwards from under the canopies, sitting low on their suspensions. Ruffy leaned from the cab of the leading truck and shouted,
"Hello, boss! Where shall we dump?"
"Take it up to the bridge. Hang on a second and I'll come with you."
Bruce slipped out of the lager and crossed quickly to Ruffy's truck.
He could feel his back tingling while he was in the open, and he slammed the door behind him with relief. "I don't relish stopping an arrow," he said. "You have any trouble while we were gone?" "No," Bruce told him, "but they're here. They were drumming in the jungle all night."
"Calling up their buddies," grunted Ruffy, and let out the clutch. "We'll have some fun before we finish this bridge. Most probably it'll take a day or two to get brave, but in the end they'll have a go at us."
"Pull over to the side of the bridge, Ruffy," Bruce instructed, and rolled down his window.
"I'll signal Hendry to pull in beside us. We'll offload into the space between the two trucks and start building the corrugated iron shield there."
While Hendry maneuvered his truck alongside, Bruce forced himself to look down on the carnage of the beach. "Crocodiles," he exclaimed with relief. The paunching rack still stood as he had last seen them, but the reeking pile of human remains was gone. The smell and the flies, however, still lingered.
"During the night," agreed Ruffy, as he surveyed the long slither marks in the sand of the beach.
"Thank God for that."
"Yeah, it wouldn't have made my boys too joyful having to clean up that lot."
"We'll send someone down to tear out those racks. I don't want to look at them while we work."
"No, they're not very pretty." Ruffy ran his eyes over the two sets of gallows.
Bruce climbed down into the space between the trucks.
"Hendry."
"That's my name."
Wally leaned out of the window.
"Sorry to disappoint you, but the crocs have done the chore for you."
"I can see, I'm not blind."
"Very well, then. On the assumption that you are neither blind nor paralyzed, how about getting your trucks unloaded?"
"Big deal," muttered Hendry.
But he climbed down and began shouting at the men under the canvas canopy.
"Get the lead out there, you lot. Start jumping about."
"What were the thickest timbers you could find?" Bruce turned to Ruffy.
9x3s, but we got plenty of them."
"They'll do," decided Bruce.
"We can lash a dozen of them together for each of the main supports." Frowning with concentration, Bruce began the task of organizing the repairs.
"Hendry, I want the timber stacked by sizes. Put the sheet iron over there."
He brushed the flies from his face.
"Ruffy, how many hammers have we got?"
10, boss, and I found a couple of hand saws."
"Good. What about nails and rope?"
"We got plenty. I got a barrel of 6-inch and..."
Preoccupied, Bruce did not notice one of the colored civilians leave the shelter of the trucks. He walked a dozen paces towards the bridge and stopped. Then, unhurriedly, he began to unbutton his trousers, and Bruce looked up.
"What the hell are you doing?"
he shouted, and the man started guiltily. He did not understand the English words, but Bruce's tone was sufficiently clear.
"Monsieur," he explained, "I wish to..."
"Get back here," roared Bruce.
The man hesitated in confusion, and then he began closing his fly.
"Hurry up, you bloody fool!"
Obediently, the man hastened the closing of his trousers. Everyone had stopped work, and they were all watching him. His face was dark with embarrassment, and he fumbled clumsily.
"Leave that," Bruce was frantic. "Get back here."
The first arrow rose lazily out of the undergrowth along the river in a silent parabola. Gathering speed in its descent, hissing softly, it dropped into the ground at the man's feet and stuck up jauntily. A thin reed, fletched with green leaves, it looked harmless as a child's plaything.
"Run!" screamed Bruce.
The man stood and stared with detached disbelief at the arrow. Bruce started forward to fetch him, but Ruffy's huge black hand closed on his arm, and he was helpless in its grip. He struck out at Ruffy, struggling to free himself, but he couldn't break that hold. A swarm of them, like locusts on the move, high arcing, fluting softly, dropping all around the man as he started to run. Bruce stopped struggling and watched. He heard the metal heads clanking onto the bonnet of the truck, saw them falling wide of the man, some of the frail shafts snapping as they hit the ground. Then, between the shoulders, like a perfectly placed banderilla, one hit him. It flapped against his back as he ran, and he twisted his arms behind him, vainly trying to reach it, his face twisted in horror and in pain.
"Hold him down," shouted Bruce, as the coloured man ran into the shelter.
Two gendarmes jumped forward, took his arms and forced him face downwards onto the ground. He was gabbling incoherently with horror as Bruce straddled his back and gripped the shaft. Only half the barbed head had buried itself, a penetration of less than an inch. But when Bruce pulled the shaft, it snapped off in his hand, leaving the steel twitching in the flesh. "Knife!" shouted Bruce, and someone thrust a bayonet into his hand. "Watch those barbs, Bosch. Don't cut yourself on them." "Ruffy, get your boys ready to repel them if they rush us," snapped Bruce, and ripped away the shirt. For a moment he stared at the crudely hand-beaten iron arrowhead. The poison coated it thickly, packed in behind the barbs, looking like sticky black toffee. "He's dead," said Ruffy, from where he leaned over the bonnet of the truck. "He just ain't stopped breathing yet." The man screamed and twisted under Bruce as he made the first incision, cutting in deep beside the arrowhead with the point of the bayonet. "Hendry, get those pliers out of the toolkit."
"Here they are."
Bruce gripped the arrowhead with the steel jaws and pulled. The flesh clung to it stubbornly, lifting in a pyramid. Bruce hacked at it with the bayonet, feeling it tear. It was like trying to get the hook out of the rubbery mouth of a catfish.
"You're wasting your time, boss," grunted Ruffy, with all the calm African acceptance of violent death. "This boy's a goner. That's no horse. That's snake juice in him, fresh mixed. He's finished."
"Are you sure, Ruffy?" Bruce looked up.
"Are you sure it's snake venom?"
"That's what they use. They mix it with cassava meal."
"Hendry, where's the snake bite outfit?"
"It's in the medicine box back at the camp."
Bruce tugged once more at the arrowhead, and it came away, leaving a deep black hole between the man's shoulder blades.
"Everybody into the trucks. We've got to get him back. Every second is vital."
"Look at his eyes," grunted Ruffy. "That injection stuff ain't going to help him much."
The pupils had contracted to the size of match heads, and he was shaking uncontrollably as the poison spread through his body.
"Get him into the truck."
They lifted him into the truck and everybody scrambled aboard. Ruffy started the engine, slammed into reverse, and the motor roared as he shot backwards over the intervening 30 yards to the lager.
"Get him out," instructed Bruce. "Bring him into the shelter."
The man was blubbering through slack lips, and he'd started to sweat. Little rivulets of it coursed down his face and naked upper body. There was hardly any blood from the wound, just a trickle of brownish fluid. The poison must be a coagulant, Bruce decided.
"Bruce, are you all right?"
Charmaine ran to meet him. "Nothing wrong with me," Bruce remembered to check his tongue this time. "But one of them has been hit."
"Can I help you?"
"No, I don't want you to watch." And he turned from her.
"Hendry, where's that bloody snakebite outfit?" he shouted.
They had dragged the man into the lager and laid him on a blanket in the shade. Bruce went to him and knelt beside him. He took the scarlet tin that Hendry handed him and opened it.
"Ruffy, get those two trucks worked into the circle and make sure your boys are on their toes. With this success, they may get brave sooner than you expected."
Bruce fitted the hypodermic needle onto the syringe as he spoke.
"Hendry, get them to rig some sort of screen round us. You can use blankets."
With his thumb, he snapped the top off the ampoule and filled the syringe with the pale yellow serum.
"Hold him," he said to the two gendarmes, lifted a pinch of skin close beside the wound and ran the needle under it.
The man's skin felt like that of a frog, damp and clammy.
As he expelled the serum, Bruce was trying to calculate the time that had elapsed since the arrow had hit.
Possibly 7 or 8 minutes.
Mamba venom kills in 14 minutes.
"Roll him over," he said. The man's head lolled sideways. His breathing was quick and shallow, and the saliva poured from the corners of his mouth, running down his cheeks.
"Get a load of that," breathed Wally Hendry, and Bruce glanced up at his face.
His expression was a glow of deep sensual pleasure, and his breathing was as quick and shallow as that of the dying man.
"Go and help Ruffy," snapped Bruce, as his stomach heaved with disgust. "Not on your Nelly. This I'm not going to miss."
Bruce had no time to argue.
He lifted the skin of the man's stomach and ran the needle in again. There was an explosive spitting sound as the bowels started to vent involuntarily.
"Jesus!" whispered Hendry.
"Get away," snarled Bruce. "Can't you let him die without gloating over it?" Hopelessly he injected again, under the skin of the chest above the heart. As he emptied the syringe, the man's body twisted violently in the first seizure, and the needle snapped off under the skin.
"There he goes," whispered Hendry. "There he goes. Just look at him, man. That's really something."
Bruce's hands were trembling, and slowly a curtain descended across his mind.
"You filthy swine," he screamed, and hit Hendry across the face with his open hand, knocking him back against the side of the gasoline tanker.
Then he went for his throat and found it with both hands. The windpipe was ropey and elastic under his thumbs.
"Is nothing sacred to you, you unclean animal?" he yelled into Hendry's face. "Can't you let a man die without..."
Then Ruffy was there, effortlessly plucking Bruce's hands from the throat, interposing the bulk of his body, holding them away from each other.
"Let it stand, boss."
"For that," gasped Hendry as he massaged his throat, "for that I'm going to make you pay."
Bruce turned away, sick and ashamed, to the man on the blanket. "Cover him up." His voice was shaky. "Put him in the back of one of the trucks. We'll bury him tomorrow."